So some of us have been sitting Sesshin or Zen meditation retreat since Thursday evening. There have been a few of us here at Clouds and Water. Today we have also Myoshin. Let's see. There she is. then Toku, of course, you see as well. And today is our last day. We actually end after the Dharma talk. Those of us in Sesshin will come back for just a little closing circle. But we're in the home stretch of Sesshin. So the brave souls who participated, and this will be our last like Zoom only Sesshin. So in a way, it's a little, it's a thing. So I'm just noticing, and also I'm noticing the kind of difficulty somewhat in the transition coming back to being in person. Like I've done a number of sessions here at Clouds with just a few people, and we were always wearing masks. And now that everyone here is vaccinated, we're not. So a few times during the session, I would start to walk out of the Doksan room and I would say to myself, "Oh my God, I don't have my mask on." And then realize, no, it's okay. It's really okay. Well, it's okay until the next thing comes, right? So it's sort of like we get used to one thing and now, hopefully we can just flow with it. So now is moving into a time of not having to wear masks always. And there might come another time where we have to wear them again. Who knows? So it's our, I think it's a testament to our Buddhist practice that we're practicing being with the flow of things, being with things as they change, being with difficult things, and being with not difficult things. So the theme that I've been working with during Sesshin is, now I finally have a title for my theme on the last day. The theme is Mind and Body Practice the Way. So what do we do with our mind in practice and our bodies? So I read a little, I had reawakened to this fun little book called The Teaching of Buddha. And the subtitle is The Buddhist Bible. So this was a present given to me on my ordination back in 1997. And anyway, it's a wonderful book because it was published in first published in 1934, and it was published sort of in coordination with a conference by the Federation of All Young Buddhist Associations of Japan at the second general conference of the Pan-Pacific Young Buddhist Association. So anyway, and then it was republished or retranslated, not retranslated, different editions were published. The fifth edition, which I think this is, was 1966. Anyway, it's a wonderful book because it is so much a synopsis of all the Buddha's teachings. The language is a bit archaic, but it's still beautiful. And one of the things I read on the first day of our session was this little, kind of a poem that the author is writing to their own mind. And I'm not sure where it comes from. This is a little bit of a problem with this book, is that it doesn't cite a lot of references. So it's probably from some Buddhist scripture, but it's interesting because it's a little bit unlike anything else in the book. And it's really like this sort of internal prayer that a person might have. And I'm just going to read parts of it because I think it just apply, I feel like it applies to us. So here it is. Oh, my mind, why do you hover so restlessly over the changing circumstances of life? Why do you make me so confused and restless? Why do you urge me to collect so many things? You are just like a plow that you break into pieces just as you begin to plow. You are like a rudder that you dismantle just as you are venturing out on the sea of life and death. So it's sort of like saying, hey, you're getting me into trouble here and you're not helping me. And then it says, oh, my foolish, foolish mind, thus you have led me along different paths and I have been obedient to you and docile. But now that I have heard Buddha's Dharma, do not disturb me anymore nor cause me further sufferings. But together, so it's do not disturb me anymore, but it's not throwing away his mind or her mind or their mind. It's not throwing it away. Together, humbly and patiently, let us seek enlightenment. So that's pretty good. It goes on, but I think I'll stop there. But then how is the question? So now this is like the beginning of the journey. This is the arising of bodhicitta, the mind that wants to go toward awakening and toward love and compassion for all beings, toward helping, not just ourselves, but all beings. So how do we follow the Buddha's Dharma, even if we get our mind to go along with it? And I think it's kind of interesting too. I've just sort of wondered, like, who is this I who's speaking to their own mind? Like, isn't that also a mind? So anyway, it's sort of funny. But I think that's how it is in our internal dialogue. We realize, like, oh, I can kind of see there's a part of myself that's getting me into trouble and that's causing more suffering. And then there's also a part of myself that can see that and can say, well, let's make a change here. Let's do something about it. So then we have that arise. And then what do we do is the question. So, one thing that we do and that we've been doing in Sesshin and many of us do every day when we practice meditation is we practice focusing our mind. So maybe we're focusing our mind on our breath. Maybe we're focusing our mind on our body. In Sesshin, one of the days we did a body scan meditation where we kind of systematically went through and really focused our attention on each part of the body. On another day, we did a walking meditation where we focused on our walking, in particular the muscles and bones of our legs and feet in walking. And then we focused on the feeling of touch of our skin, like the clothes on our skin and the breeze, anything that was in contact with our skin. And then we focused on sounds that we heard, just letting the raw sound come in, focusing that way. And each time we did these focuses, then anytime some other thought kind of thought came up, so like maybe we switched to focusing on sounds and now I'm thinking about my feet, you know, so to say, okay, come back to focus on sounds, not because sounds are better than focusing on our feet and legs, but just to practice coming into focus. And then we also practiced focusing on our judgments. So I invited people, and this was suggestions from a book by Darlene Cohen called The One Who Is Not Busy. So that's a beautiful book. So she had suggested all of these different focuses for walking meditation. And then at one point, it was like, okay, now focus on looking around the room as you're walking and noticing your judgments about what you don't like. So, and I wanted, when we talked about it, one of our session participants said right away when I said that, they said, "Oh, no, I don't want to go there. I've been in this really nice place of focusing on my feeling in my legs and the sounds and the sights, and now you're asking me to focus on what I don't like." And I think I've thought about it since then, and I think the reason is so that because all the time when we go through our day-to-day life, judgments come up about what we like and don't like. And usually we don't so much pay attention to that, that it's a judgment coming up. And then also when that comes up, like what happens, how that's landing with us, how we're feeling in our bodies, when that judgment comes up. And I've found a quote from Suzuki Roshi. This is from Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, where he's talking about emptiness. And there he says, as long as you have some fixed idea or are caught by some habitual way of doing things, you cannot appreciate things in their true sense. So I thought this was kind of related to the, that lots of times we're caught by our fixed ideas, by our habitual way of doing things, by our judgments. And it's not to say that we never should have a judgment. Like I was eating breakfast this morning and enjoying a piece of toast, and I said, okay, I prefer or I judge to eat this piece of toast instead of a piece of cardboard. Like that would probably be good if I ate the toast and left the cardboard in the recycling. But, where does my mind, when does it that I fix on it and that I fix on things have to be a certain way? What happens when I, I'm only looking at, I'm only judging. So even like eating the toast, if I'm like judging it, like this is really good and it's good for me that I'm having this piece of toast, I'm not actually even noticing the taste. I'm not actually even noticing what it feels like as it go enters my body and nourishes me in the digestion. So that's the issue with the judgment is that we can become fixed on it, and then it prevents us from being open. It prevents us from appreciating things in their true sense. Like if I did happen to, by mistake, start eating a piece of cardboard, I could just notice, like, oh, this how this feels in my mouth. And maybe I'd say, actually, I'll set it down now and pick up the toast. That's not quite the same as fixing on a judgment. I don't think. I don't know. Maybe I'm splitting hairs with that. But there's lots of teachings about this, so I think it's worth calling that up. In the Xinching Ming, it says the way is without difficulties, just avoid picking and choosing. The great way is without difficulties, just avoid picking and choosing. It's like, well, we could say, that's impossible. I can't live like that. I have to choose some things. And yeah, like I said, it's true. We do choose maybe not to jump off a cliff, or walk into a burning building. But so what does that really mean, that teaching? And where can we see our attachment? So it's worth engaging it rather than just tossing it out to say, well, that's impossible, so I can't engage it at all. One thing that I think can really help us is where we kind of step back for a big view and create some space. So I was interested in looking at openness when, as I thought about how we're practicing with our body and mind in following the way and how we can possibly live with noticing our judgments as they arise and not getting caught by them. And I found a beautiful teaching from Norman Fisher in the book, The World Could Be Otherwise. And actually, he's talking about the paramita of generosity that Jinkan mentioned this morning. And it's sort of like he's talking about what you have to do before. It's like sort of in order to sort of fertilize your ground for practicing generosity. And he's talking about opening up. And so this is really what we've been doing in Sesshin, and I think a lot of our practice. He says, first, we pay close attention to our thoughts and viewpoints, which are an expression of our attitudes. So that's like when we were walking and say, okay, now notice what you don't like. Notice when a judgment's coming up about what you don't like. And then we switch to, okay, now notice when a judgment is coming up about what you like. Of course, there's different feelings there. Like it could be somewhat positive, but then if we attach, we might notice like right away that we have some suffering then. Because it's like that now, but what will happen later? Like if I'm noticing that I'm really happy that the dishes are all done and the kitchen is clean, then when the dirty coffee cup goes in the sink, you know, right away, I'm sort of like on edge, like, when is it gonna change? So just notice and pay close attention to those. He says, study our minds by noticing in detail whenever we feel pinched, small, fearful, or stingy. Whenever we find ourselves seeing the glass half empty rather than half full. So we see it. There's that darn coffee cup in the sink, rather than saying everything is clean and one cup. We kind of have a joke in our family when someone's doing the dishes and they're almost done, and then someone brings that last plate or the last cup, and we would sort of exaggerate it, go, ah. And it's funny because it's like just recognizing, yeah, that's our attitude that comes up. But by joking about it, we kind of shift it. So that's a fun thing we do. It's a way of catching ourselves. So we can learn, Norman says, to identify these feelings in our bodies and minds and notice the tightness in our chests and breathing, the clenching in our shoulders and faces, the old familiar paranoid and panicky feelings of thought. And we learn to catch ourselves in midstream and just suddenly stop. And we can ask ourselves, is this really true? Is it really the end of the world? There's one more cup coming to me to wash, or am I really under attack, or is there really not enough to go around? And then we can further ask ourselves, he says, what are the effects of this habit of mind? So I think that's, you know, noticing the consequences of the habitual patterns of mind, and that the response, the consequences usually are not good. They're causing us more suffering, or it ends up that we say things or do things that kind of mess up our relationships or our health or our state of mind. So he goes on to talk about, all right, what's the best way to, now if we realize, okay, yeah, I have a bad attitude, how can we cultivate an expansive attitude of generosity? And of course, since he's a Zen teacher and a Zen practitioner, he says meditation. And I would say that too. Like meditation is one of the best ways, I think. I mean, there's in other practices, other spiritual paths, there may be other ways, but in this path, meditation, and meditation includes more than just sitting, but sitting is kind of a pivotal part of it, or being still anyway, if you're health is compromised and you can't sit and you have to do lying down meditation, that would be all right too. But basically, to be still and be in connection with your breath and your body and letting yourself relax and focusing your attention not so much on your thoughts, feelings, or sensations as on the spaciousness that surrounds them. So when we did the body scan meditation in Sesshin, I invited people to, like, if we were concentrating, okay, now pay attention to your foot and the bones in your feet and the muscles and tendons and the skin, and now the area around your foot. So in other words, it's starting to expand out, not just even my own body, but including a bigger space. So often if we have one thing in our body, like say a toothache, and then all of our attention is there, like just right there. But if we can shift our focus to our whole body, then it's a little bit easier to receive that toothache because we can notice there's the whole body. You know, my finger doesn't hurt. You know, my right leg doesn't hurt. Or maybe it does, but you know, it's like there's things that hurt and things that don't hurt. There's a bigger container. So we can start with our body as, you know, expanding the boundary, but we can also expand it even larger than that. So the space around our body or the whole room or our whole house, the whole earth, the whole universe, however big we want to go. But sometimes for our minds, it's good not to just try to jump to something too big. So we could start with just expanding it to our bodies and the space around our bodies. And when we do that, then now if we're working with, whether we're working with a particular sensation that we're having trouble with or the thoughts in our mind, so this is another way to work with our minds. If we have, you know, sort of difficult thoughts that keep occurring, you know, obsessive thoughts, worries, anxiety, feelings, we can receive those. So it's not like we're trying to get rid of them or push them away, but we're just creating a large container in which to receive them. And then they can come and then they can go. So I kind of feel like that's all I want to say for this morning, and I want to leave a little bit of time if there's comments or questions that people have about what I've said or about practice in general or about the post-pandemic world or whatever you would like to bring up. So I'll make sure that our speaker's on here so we can hear you. So please just unmute if you would like to say something. And oh, I want to mention too, here's another feature. If you want to say something but don't want to be recorded, you can just either say that or put it in the chat and we can pause the recording.
So, San, can you talk a little bit more about what you mean by bigger container?
Sure. So let's say I'm worried about something, and I just keep thinking about it over and over again because I'm worried. In a certain way, it's like my container for that is just my skull or my brain. Like I'm only. It even feels like it manifests in that way, like the focus is like right kind of here. Whereas, so I'm not allowing my view to be bigger than that. But if I just shift my focus to say, all right, even if I just say like, how is my whole body feeling right now? Well, I might even notice that the anxiety isn't just here. I might notice, oh, my stomach feels a little queasy. So already I've shifted it now. And then I could ask myself, well, what is that feeling? I mean, not like why is it there, but like what is it? And so then if like I think about describing it to myself, and then I might notice that it's changing. So that's a bigger container. But, you know, for me, sometimes it's like I do really specifically say like, okay, what about my whole body? What am I feeling? And so those thoughts could still be kind of happening, but then they kind of shift to the background in a certain way, because now I'm changing my focus. And recently I've, you know, discovered that if I even just, it sounds kind of funny, but this is something my somatic experiencing therapist, who's also is familiar with and does Buddhist practice, so asked me to just touch the walls of my house, like touch the wall. You know, I think it was just to like provide a kind of stability. But for me, it's like as soon as I did that, then it's like the whole house was a container. And so it's like, oh, now this worry or this anxiety or this difficult feeling, it's kind of getting smaller in relation to where it is. And so that's, you know, sort of like as I think about where is this experience arising? If I think the container is really large, then it's no problem. I mean, there's a famous story or parable, I think, from Buddhism about how if you take a spoonful of salt and mix it into a glass of water and then taste it, it's very salty. But if you took that same teaspoon of salt, and I'll just use a local thing, and threw it into Lake Superior, you know, and then you tasted the water, it wouldn't, you couldn't even taste that there was salt in there. So that's what the bigger container does, is it just, it's not that the salt isn't there, but it just puts it in a different perspective.
Thank you. Very good. Very helpful.
Good morning, Sosan.
Good morning, Shokai.
I, oh my mind. I'm thinking about the interaction of body and mind. And I'm thinking about how it sometimes comforts me, because when I start doing that, oh my mind, which sounds a bit shaming, but I think maybe we all do that. I certainly do. Saying, what's up with you, mind? Why are you doing what you're doing? I sometimes find some comfort in saying, you know, sometimes I don't know why my mind is going that way. And it's just my body, my physiology, that is putting my mind in that direction. Say, anxiety, depression, things that can be really just the chemical reactions in my body are pushing my mind in that direction. So I guess I just kind of open that up. If you want to talk about that a little bit more, about the interaction of body and mind in that way. And that for me, I can find it easier to forgive my mind when I say, well, I don't know why my mind is doing this. And so I just am just going to accept it and move on. So, and just kind of see it and know with the idea of impermanence that it will pass.
Thank you. Yeah, that just reminds me of when I was working in mental health, and I listened to a lecture by a Chinese American therapist and speaker, and it was about cultural differences in therapy. And there's a word which I can't remember now, it's called when you there's some mental condition that happens and then it manifests in the body. So therapists or psychologists, psychiatrists would often say things like, well, the person is just somatizing it, or making it, you know, making that, you know, sort of dismissing, like to say, oh, they're putting that into the body, but really it's depression, or really it's anxiety, but it's showing up as, you know, stomach ache. And he turned it on its head and says, why is it that, you know, that, because it would be heard like, oh, sort of Asian people, you know, do that thing of making it into the body. And he said something like, why is it that white people always mentalize things, you know, like, so that it is in the body, but that we have to put a word on it. We white people, white therapists, he was calling out to say, yeah, that's depression or anxiety. Well, maybe it's a stomach ache. And then it, we define it, you know, it does something to our mind that says, okay, depression or anxiety or whatever. So, but really, you know, what it is that it's all working together, right? So who knows where it starts, but it's working together and interacting. And so I think it's just helpful to see both body and mind, how they are working together. The other thing I want to say is that I think I maybe didn't get the tone of this right, because I really feel like the person who wrote this, oh, my mind, and was asking these questions of why do you do this? It was like more from love, or like, oh, my little child, you know, why are you, you know, banging your head against the wall? You know, why are you making yourself suffer? And actually, as it goes on, it does say, oh, my dear mind, you know, oh, my dear, dear mind. So it's really, I think, said, the imploring is said with love. And we can do that, too. We can say that to ourselves. Does that help? Does that address your question?
Yes, it does. We can say it to both our bodies and our minds.
Yes, yes. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Yes, Rin.
Thank you, Sosam. That was a wonderful talk. I was thinking about the kind of concept and teaching of turning poisons into wheels as you were speaking, and habituated reactivity or karmic reactions as kind of a very fruitful place of practice. It's really seeing into habits of mind and with kind of a way-seeking mind. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit more about turning poisons into wheels as a practice, because it's, and I think you mentioned it quite a lot in that. And I was also thinking about the 12 links. I so often notice that when I'm in that reactivity, it ratchets up very quickly, and I can see myself going through those kind of patterns. So I'm wondering if you can mention a little bit about that. Thank you.
Well, I'm not steeped in the 12 links, so I won't talk about that, but I will talk about turning poison into wheels, or Dharma wheel. So it's like, if a difficult thing arises, whatever it is, whether it's your own habit pattern, whether it's something so-called external that's happening to you, something with your physical health, if you can find a way to receive it, then there's Dharma gates open for you. Well, actually, the Dharma gates probably open anyway. but you can see that they're opening, or you can enjoy the fruits of their opening when you engage with it, you know, consciously. So that's why I thought that the instruction of like, notice your judgment about what you don't like was helpful, even though it's like, in a way, it's like, I do that all the time. I don't want to do that right now. Right now I'm enjoying, you know, noticing sounds on a raw level. And it's like, yeah, but can we actually notice a pattern that we do all the time that is unpleasant, and then notice how it's unpleasant, and notice how it's causing suffering? And then, you know, that's really the first step, or one of the first steps of being free. Because then we really take it in, and when we really see, oh, this is really causing suffering, the chances are we're not going to engage that pattern again, at least not in the same way. Or if we do engage it again, we'll see it even more quickly the second time, or the third time, or the next time. So that's the turning toward part, the turning toward the difficulties, is not to try to accrue difficulties. It's not to make things more difficult for us. That's not why we're doing it. We're doing it because the difficulty is already there. But Resmaa Menakem talks about clean pain. I think that's similar to that too, where clean pain is where we can say, yeah, I'm going to take this in because it's going to help me see what's off. And it's going to help transform that pattern in the future for myself and others. Thank you for your question.
Thank you.
I think we have time for one more.
Hi, Sosan. This is Carla.
Hi, Carla.
Hi. Thank you for your talk this morning. I'm thinking about post-pandemic life. Mm-hmm. As it relates to our community, our Sangha, and, you know, the broader community also. I feel like the past, what has it been, 16 months or something, it's like we've had our bodies clenched and constricted, like tight, mm-hmm. and now we're, I mean, part of Buddhist practice is about freeing ourselves and letting go and I think it's going to take some time for our Sangha once we get back together physically. I mean, speaking for myself personally, having had the vaccine, I feel safer being out in public and over time, sort of testing each new experience of gathering with groups of people. And I have continued to work in person during the past year. So I've had some more practice with this compared to other people who have isolated. But I think as a Sangha, there's sort of like this body practice that we're going to go through as we start to open up and see one another in person. And it is going to be, like Rob was talking about, of sort of working with our body and mind. And I think that over time, that's going to get easier, but it'll probably be pretty challenging at first. And so I'd like your thoughts on how you're feeling about post-pandemic life too. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for bringing that up, because that's kind of reminding me that I think it would be very good for the teachers over the next few weeks to really talk about that directly. And then also as we open up, to continue talking about that. Because yeah, it's, you know, people are, you know, it's, we have really experienced collective trauma around this, and people are dealing with it in all kinds of different ways. So I have a friend who said something like, it's like that was all a dream. It's like, she said, it's like it was childbirth. So if you, people who have had children, been in labor, often will, they sort of have amnesia right afterwards about how hard it was. And they're like, oh, that wasn't so bad, you know, like a day later or even a few hours, you know, like after when the other hormones kick in to, like, you know, the feel good hormones come up. And so she said, it's kind of like that for me. And I said, it's interesting, because for me, it's kind of like in the pandemic, I wasn't allowing myself to feel what it was, the real impact of it. And now that we're starting to get back together in concert with my joy at being with people in person, I'm feeling the pain of the past 14, 16 months of being isolated. and how hard that was. So I'm feeling like, wow, in my body, there's this, you know, there's this grief that's coming up now that I wasn't able to feel before. And other people have reported things like being uncomfortable standing close to other people because we've just practiced the physical distancing for so long. And then it's like, is that okay? So I think just watching what happens with our bodies and minds and taking care of ourselves. So it's not like to shame ourselves if we do, you know, if any of these different feelings come up or if we feel uncomfortable, you know, going in a big group. It's like just to be tender with ourselves about it, I think is important. And that's why I think it's also going to be really helpful that we'll continue with the Zoom option so that people can gradually come back to in person as they feel ready. And that will be all right as well. Is there anything else kind of around that you were hoping for? Okay, thank you. Thanks for the question. All right. I'll turn it over to Toku and I'll need to mute and turn my speaker off.
Thank you, Sosan. We'll close now with our closing chant. And we have a few important announcements after that, if you could stick around, please.